And welcome to the Go Home Show podcast. I'm Michael Henson, and joining me as ever is a very tired Chris Anderson for a review of SmackDown from October 2nd. There's a lot to get through, so let's jump straight in. Chris, over to you to start us off.
Yeah, we started off with Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns in the ring. This was kind of the very typical WWE intro. We often have the champ cutting a promo for a cold start. What was slated was that we were going to see Roman Reigns officially appointed as the tribal chief of the WWE. However, Roman Reigns says he doesn't want Paul Heyman to call him that because Jay wouldn't call him that. Jimmy would, but Jay wouldn't. So he calls Jay out, asks Jay if this is what he wanted. Does he want another shot? Does he want another shot at Hell in a Cell? Because if he wants it, he's got it. However, this match will have, and I quote, the highest stakes that any match has ever had in WWE history. Jay accepts. As Roman's leaving, out comes AJ Styles, says that Jay should give the shot to someone more deserving. It all kicks off and we have our first match. Now, the promo itself was fine. I really enjoyed it. It was typical Reigns. Reigns heel, where he doesn't talk too loudly. He's not aggressive in what he's saying. He's very, you can kind of see that side of logic to what he's saying. Like, everything he's saying is very believable. The only thing that has me nervous is when you describe the match as having the highest stakes that any match has ever had in WWE history, you have to deliver on that. Otherwise, you end up in a spot where it kind of loses all credibility in itself. If the stakes are just, if you don't win this, you can never have a WWE title shot again. We've kind of seen that before. Like, we've seen that story played before, and you can't really say, like, oh, this is the highest stakes of all time. However, if it is if you lose this, the Usos have to break up forever. I can live. I'm all good with that. That's a good thing, because the Usos essentially is Jay and Jimmy's identity, or has been for the last decade or so in the WWE. I enjoyed the segment. I think it's a good segment. It led us nicely into our first match, which, Crush, I'll let you go with.
Yeah, this was a very simple story between AJ and Jay. AJ was quite strong early on, feeding to the story of Jay simply not being top level. Then we start to see a bit of a Jay comeback. There's a couple of hope spots. Then there's a big babyface comeback from Jay. It's a really nice match. Go check it out if you can. Between this and the main event, our two favourite matches from the night. And the finish, AJ was going for the phenomenal forearm. You see him with the elbow pad, getting up on the rope. Jay kicks him off the rope, so he's hung up. He then super kicks him off the ropes, hits the splash, wins clean set of the ring for the victory. And surely this is AJ Styles over to Raw, Chris?
Yeah, that's how it felt to me, because it was a very... Not that the story didn't make sense, but it seemed like a weird time for AJ Styles to come in. Like, certainly off the back of that promo, where this whole story being told is very much, it's almost like it's a family issue. Everything is kept within the family. Then AJ Styles comes in from nowhere. I think we'll see AJ go into Raw. Obviously, there have been rumours that perhaps him and Paul Heyman don't get on great. So on that level, it also makes sense. I thought the match was very, very good, though. It was exactly what it needed to be. Yes, it was a bit predictable because we kind of all knew what was going to happen. But actually, for a 10-minute match, where you put over Jey Uso now as a credible singles competitor because he has beaten a former WWE champion. This did exactly what it needed to do. We move on from there with the promo with Sami Zayn backstage. This was very classic heel stuff. This was a little bit paint by numbers. Essentially, he didn't blame WWE for the last 6 months with these false champions in Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles. He blamed the WWE universe because they allowed this to happen. They went with the ride. So he puts the other IC belt in the bin. It's the Alunda Blaze moment. And he says that's where the WWE universe belongs. It was very WWE heel, paint by numbers, typical promo. However, it does its job. It does exactly what he needs to. So I have a lot of time for it. And then we're told that next week, Otis Dozovich will defend himself in court. Because of course he will. Because this whirlwind nonsense storyline between Otis and Heavy Machinery and Miz and Morrison is now going to court. Because why not? But that does very nicely lead us into our next match. Crush, I'm going to let you take this one because this one hurt my soul a little bit.
Yeah, it was Otis versus John Morrison. Happy birthday to John Morrison for yesterday. You didn't get the best present because he lost in less than 2 minutes.
One minute and 41 seconds.
Yeah, so Morrison is quick to roll to the outside. He goes Otis into a high kick. Then Otis hits a right and Morrison rolls into the ring. He steps onto the chest of Morrison, which looks very, very painful. Like, I don't know what Otis is waiting, but I would not like
more than most people.
I would not like someone stamping on my chest, no matter how heavy they are. He then sends Morrison to the rope. Then John Morrison rolls over the back of Otis, but he's hit with a very hard clothesline. Again, it's very similar to Chris's clotheslines when I've seen him wrestling. Like, wouldn't like to take one of them either. There's then an elbow to Morrison. He sends John up and then down. Morrison goes for a high kick, but Otis lifts and tosses him over his head. Then Otis goes for a big splash in the corner to set up the caterpillar. We get the caterpillar, and then we see a very innovative move from Otis. He gets up to the top rope and does a splash. Gets the 1-2-3. Like, I was not expecting that to then happen after the caterpillar, right, because it's so early in the morning and my brain wasn't working yet. But yeah, and then Otis wins in 1:41 on John Morrison's birthday, and they did John Morrison dirty.
Who is John Morrison pissed off? Like, what has he done? Why did he deserve that? Oh, God. I'm all in. I love Otis being Mr. Money in the Bank because it actually allows for a lot of comedy in a segment that doesn't usually have comedy in it. But this needs to go somewhere now, I think. And if The Miz or Morrison wins the briefcase off of Otis in court next week, I'm going to have a lie down, I think. let's just go somewhere with it now. Let's just see where this is going. Anyway, let's move on, because this was not the only squash of the night. We move on to Sheamus versus Chad Gable. Is he Chad Gable or is he Shorty G now? I can't remember. Is he still Shorty G? Apologies. It's very early. Yeah, Sheamus versus Shorty G. Now, you thought 1 minute and 41 seconds was a short match. This one went for a whopping 43 seconds. Sheamus goes for a bro kick. Gable rolls him up for a 1-2, but no, kicks out. Sheamus misses in the corner. Gable hits a German into the pin for a 1-2, also a kick out. Gable goes to the top. Gable hits a moonsault. Sheamus moves, though, hits the bro kick. Pin, 1-2-3. It's 43 seconds. If Chad Gable is the super... And I want to put this out there. I love Chad Gable. Chad Gable, in my opinion, is more underutilized and underrated than Cesaro. And everyone knows how I feel about Cesaro. Chad Gable, if he's the returning NXT superstar after this, it's absolutely ended it for me. Because it's a 43-second squash. And I know they're putting Sheamus over strong as this big guy who loves to beat up the small guys. But it was 43 seconds.
I mean, to be fair,
Rush, please help me.
It's a devastating bro kick.
It is. This is not me burying Sheamus. I just want more for. I'm not calling him Shorty G. Just want more for Chad Gable. That's all I want. Just give me more for Chad Gable.
And then we move nicely into the next section, the KO show. Despite Kevin Owens being on Raw, but it's Kevin Owens.
Kevin Owens to SmackDown.
So we allow it potentially, but then he's also got a match on Monday after the back of this segment. So.
Oh yeah, forgot about that.
So it's a good segment. Alexa Bliss is out. It's probably the most we've seen her in the Sister Abigail character. Obviously, she's done stuff before, but this is the first time I've actually seen them together. So it starts with a typical interview, and Alexa's giving, should we say, normal answers in inverted commas.
Yeah,
insane.
She's just talking normally. How you'd expect Alexa Bliss to be answering questions.
Then we get on to the Fiend, the topic of the Fiend. Obviously, we saw with Lacey Evans, and she said the Fiend, it's the eyes are going, and she hits the Sister Abigail. But her tone of voice doesn't change. Words come a lot more wild.
Yeah, it's... Sorry, I know I'm jumping in here. This was... I'm getting ahead of myself, but this was very well done. In that, usually we've seen, like, you know, the trance, where we've seen her suddenly, like, glaze over and walk off. Here, she at no point does she start acting in any way crazy. It's just that she's talking normal, and you can, it's that idea that the Fiend has fully sold her on the dream that is the Fiend. Sorry, continue. I know I'm jumping in a lot. Apologies. You go, Crush. This is your show.
Eventually, Bliss says, yes, her brain has been washed. She sees the truth, and she's been changed by him. She's been cleansed. So then Kevin's like, he's here, isn't he? She's like, haha, he's everywhere. And I can hear him now. And then it's, let him in. Lights, and then Kevin Owens stands up, lights go out, he's ready for a fight, lights go back on, Fiend has a mandible claw on Owens as Alexa watches from a seat. He hits the mandible claw, it's real close up of the mask, and then he just turns to her, walks over, hand out. Alexa gets up, hand in hand. What's next for these two? Who knows? But I am very excited by this. really forward to see where it's going. Obviously, it started with the Braun Strowman stuff at Extreme Rules and seeing him in the Visions to this now. And then on Raw, it's Kevin Owens versus Bray Wyatt, not The Fiend. So interested to see how that develops.
Yeah, I agree. I think this has been very well done. This was, obviously, this was the most... It's been very obvious. They're not trying to hide the fact that Alexa Bliss is kind of teaming up with The Fiend. This was the most on the nose, the most like confirmation, because it's not, they're not, they've actually been together doing stuff together. I really enjoyed this. I think this is a really good way to go. If Kevin Owens stays on Raw after this and The Fiend stays on SmackDown, that's a little bit weird to me. Like, I think there are other ways to get to this kind of idea of having Alexa Bliss and The Fiend together, but they obviously wanted him to, they obviously wanted the first time that these two essentially tack someone together. I know Alexa didn't get physically involved to be on a top level superstar. I liked this a lot. I thought this was really good. I very much enjoyed it. It did lead us into next up was an odd booking for a tag match where we see Matt Riddle and Lucha House Party minus Kalisto versus Corbin, Cesaro and Nakamura. The match starts off and then we see Kalisto comes running out saying, "You forgot me." So I don't know. I guess the story they're telling here is that they found out they had a Lucha House Party were tagging with Matt Riddle. And they just decided that they decided that it was going to be the other two and not Kalisto and never told Kalisto. But sure, we'll go with that. The match itself is actually very good. It is a very typical six-man SmackDown Live tag team match. There's nothing, I would say, particularly unusual in it. You're not going to miss any spots where you're like, "Oh my God, I can't believe I missed that," if you don't go and see it. But the match itself is good. Obviously, we've said this before, Cesaro and Lince Dorado work very well together. I mean, Cesaro and everyone work well together, but he's a very, very good base for the Lucha style. So I will always, always be up for a match that involves Cesaro and the Lucha House Party. The finish, Lince tries to push Cesaro towards the ropes where Kalisto is. Cesaro switches it. Kalisto goes to kick. Did he go to kick Cesaro or did he kick Lince on purpose? Who knows? But he kicks Lince. However, this doesn't cost them the match, which is where you typically expect there to see them sell off, get rolled up or get hit with a finisher by the heel team. That goes over. The faces still win. A distracted Cesaro turns around, gets hit by the bro Derek from Riddle for the pin. 1, 2, 3. After the match, there's a lot of pushing and shoving between the Lucha House Party. Matt Riddle, hilariously with his braided hair, is the voice of reason, trying to calm everyone down. I like that they have something for Lucha House Party. I've enjoyed them as a tag team for years and years and years. They are horrendously underrated. They're very, very good at the Lucha stuff. I think it's one of those that, because they're not Rey Mysterio, they always struggle to kind of get taken as seriously as they could be as luchadors. It was just a weird way to get to the right place to be in the booking, if that makes sense.
Yeah, completely agree. Obviously, they've teased a few weeks now for Lucha House Party to split up. So, again, it's continuing that storyline of when they're going to pull the trigger. We're not too sure. We then get the mystery woman revealed, but...
Was it a mystery?
I mean, it wasn't
too obvious, but it wasn't that surprising either.
Yeah, but obviously the tattoo, I think, on her left arm gave it away. So anyway, Carmella is revealed as the mystery woman. She said that she needed to take a good hard look in the mirror. She got lost a little, and she knows who to blame, and it's us. Yes, that's me. It's Chris. It's every one of you listening. All
no,
of them.
It's specifically the go-home show. She was blaming us specifically.
I mean, yeah, I would, to be fair. She's danced around, she's had her fun, and she's got nowhere. Then she remembered she was Carmella, and she's better than each and every one of us. She's not a princess anymore this time. She's untouchable. Chris, what's your thoughts on this?
I hope it goes. It's a difficult one at the moment because obviously the SmackDown Live women's division essentially is just Sasha versus Bayley. Like, that's more or less all we're seeing from the women's division. Which, like, don't get me wrong, the story of Sasha versus Bayley is incredible, but I wish there was like a mid undercard of the women's division as well. However, what I was going to say was we did a video on Sports Facebook. You should check it out from Inside the Ropes this week, where we were talking about Edge's debut all the way back, and he was saying that the point of these kind of vignettes, where it's not promos or anything like that, it is like the high production vignettes, is to give someone a real push before they come back. Like, these are designed to be like, "Hey, you've got a real head start. Let's go with this." So that would suggest that Carmella is going to get a big push when she comes back. Now, how that works in with Sasha and Bayley, I don't know. My guess is that either Sasha and Bayley or Sasha or Bayley get drafted. They either get separated and they kind of continue their feud cross-platform. Maybe it gets put on ice for a bit until the Royal Rumble, where Sasha costs Bayley or Bayley costs Sasha, whatever it will be. Or Carmella will get drafted over to Raw, where there is more time on the show, so they have a better, a more, a, I'd say a deeper women's division. And they've just used this run-up to that to kind of give her that running start into it. We'll have to wait and see. Like we said, it wasn't really a surprise that she was the mystery woman. Like you said, the tattoo, and also I think it was kind of, she'd been off TV for a while, so we were expecting something from her. This will very much go, for me, goes into the, let's give it some time and see where it goes post-draft.
I mean, yeah, I just hope it isn't anything like the Emelina stuff we saw a few years back.
Jesus.
If it was a few weeks back, then my life was drunk. No, it's a few years ago we saw the Emelina stuff, and then it was sort of like binned off quite quickly, so hopefully it's not going to be that. But that leads us nicely into the next segment, where Sasha Banks returned to SmackDown. So the neck brace is off now. Sasha is wondering if Bayley really thought her not being medically cleared was going to stop her. You'd thought she'd learned to get a backbone from Sasha after all these years, and Bayley's nothing but a coward that needed Sasha time and time again to keep her title. Some strong words there from Sasha. She was using Sasha every step of the way for accomplishments and achievements, and come next week, it's going to be them two facing off the one thing Bayley loves the most. No, it's not her dog. It's the title. And they both know when it comes down to Bayley and Sasha, there's no one to save Bayley, and she doesn't stand a chance. Chris, I'm predicting shenanigans for this.
Yeah, absolutely. Shenanigans out the window. It is the fact that they're doing this next week actually kind of relieves me a little bit, because there were rumours that Sasha versus Bayley was going to be the main event at Hell in a Cell. The issue for me personally I would have with that is, at the moment, Roman Reigns, Jey Uso seems to be the most important thing on every show across WWE. So I feel like it would always come, it always fall under the Jey Uso, Roman Reigns shadow. So what I would quite like actually is if they can find a way to kind of just slow the burn on this feud a little bit, let Jey Uso and Roman Reigns like reach the pinnacle of their feud, because this, the Sasha Banks Bayley feud deserves to be a main event on whatever show it ends up on, whether it's Hell in a Cell, whether it's Survivor Series or the Royal Rumble or Mania, wherever it is. It's been such a well-worked feud for such a long time, not just in this iteration, but going all the way back to like NXT and all that kind of stuff. It deserves to have a spotlight and it be the centerpiece of a show. So I hope they find a way to kind of slow the burn a little bit, whether that is Sasha kind of re-aggravates the injury so she has to go off TV for a little bit, or they end up getting split up on the draft. Whatever it is, I enjoy the fact that they're doing something next week that seems to be not the finish to it, but kind of like a half-time in the feud to allow Jey Uso and Roman Reigns to do their thing, and then we can come back to this feud and it can really be what it deserves to be and have its place in the show that it deserves to have.
Yeah, again, I completely agree with you, Chris. I think I've agreed with a lot this week, so
it's a strange feeling. Are changing. I'm not enjoying it.
And
that led us.
We spoke before, yeah. I'm gonna let you take it. Go for it. Go for the main event.
We are. So, at Clash of Champions, I feel like fairly unanimously, the match of the night for a lot of people was the triple threat ladder match between Sami Zayn, Jeff Hardy, and AJ Styles. This week, we got Sami Zayn versus Jeff Hardy in a singles match for the Intercontinental title. Now, I think it's fair to say that a lot of the time in main events on WWE TV shows, we kind of know how a match is going to be structured because it's TV. That's the point. It's not pay-per-view. Everything on TV essentially is marketing for your pay-per-views, either at the end of the month or in 6 weeks, whatever it is. This one, for me, completely went away from that structure in that the story they told was very, very un-WWE TV. Rather than it just being the babyface fighting to come back and the heel just being on top for the majority of the match, and then the babyface has the big comeback and we, you know, we have a couple of near falls, we go home. The story they told out of this match actually was how Sami Zayn channeled his true ace, Toru Yano, and removed the turnbuckle pad early on in the match. Now that led into the story for the entire match and it worked really well. During the match, Sami Zayn worked kind of the back of the head and neck of Jeff Hardy well. The finish was really, really good. They played in story throughout the match. Towards the end, you get a good little pinning sequence. Sami reversed the twist of fate into a backslide for a genuine near count. And instantly, Jeff Hardy reversed the Blue Thunderbomb into a roll-up. As we go on, Jeff ends up looking for the win, goes for the Swanton Bomb. Sammy gets his knees up straight onto the back of the head and neck of Jeff Hardy, who sells it beautifully. Jeff ends up in the corner without the turnbuckle pad. Sammy goes for the Huluva kick. Jeff dodges. Sammy just about stops himself. Jeff goes back to the top. Sami Zayn takes the legs from underneath him. Jeff's face bounces off the exposed steel turnbuckle straight into the finish. There was nothing else. That was it. 1, 2, 3 from there. Jeff looked like he was out. He sold it really, really well. If you're going to watch one match from SmackDown Live this week, make sure it is the main event. It was a really, really good match. There is enough surprises and enough unusual stuff in there for you to think that this was a genuinely good match. Had this been a pay-per-view match, it wasn't a main event pay-per-view match, but had this been a mid-card pay-per-view match, we would have said, yeah, this was a really good match. We really enjoyed it. It was on TV, essentially for free. I thought it was really good. Cross, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, as you say, I know we touched on it at the start of the show, but Jey Uso against AJ and this main event between Sammy and Jeff. It's two very good matches from this week's SmackDown. But like Chris said, if you only got time for one match, I'd go for this one. Like, Sami Zayn is incredible. Like, we saw his heel promo before. Like, he now can be elevated to back where he was before the lockdown and before the pandemic happened. Really looking forward to seeing where he can go with this Intercontinental title. Obviously, as Chris mentioned before, we saw the Alundra Blaze moment. And then we've seen, as Chris said, the Toriano is true ace and the turnbuckle stuff. So, yeah, interesting to see where it goes. Probably ended up Hell in a Cell between him and Jeff, and probably Jeff jumping off Hell in a Cell because Jeff Hardy is Jeff Hardy. But yeah, again, as Chris said, highlight of the show. And it was a good show all around. Like, it's the Clash of Champions fallout, obviously preparing for the draft. This time next week, we'll know who has been drafted to SmackDown. So we'll be able to pick that up next Saturday morning, UK time. It's probably going to be, I don't know, what time is it? 3 a.m. over on the East Coast and 12 a.m. over on the West Coast. But that's
sure
all.
We'll all be tuning in. 250th highest rated wrestling podcast in the US. You're welcome.
But yeah, thanks for tuning in. Make sure to leave us a review on the podcast if you've enjoyed it. Follow us on Twitter at Go Home Show Pod and check us out on YouTube, Sport Wrestling, for all our interviews and clips from the main podcast. Make sure to check out the NXT TakeOver 31 preview tomorrow for myself and Chris, and we'll have a review show from that on Monday morning. The main podcast came out on Thursday too, with us discussing the best WWE game of all time, Dolph Ziggler as a new champions, number one contender, and much more, as well as NXT UK number one contender, Ilya Dragunov dropping by for a chat. Thanks for tuning in. Let's go home.